Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. A book tells stories of despair and of hope for street children in Tanzania. Film critic Peter Malone tells us about his favourite film at the recent Cannes Film Festival. But first, we listen to the words of Pope Benedict XVI, who recited the Angelus prayer in St. Peter's Square, together with the many faithful who were there to be with him. Chris Altieri tells us more.
Thousands of pilgrim faithful braved threatening skies and intermittent drizzle to pray the Angelus with Pope Benedict XVI this Sunday in St. Peter's Square. Speaking on the Feast of the Most Holy Trinity, Pope Benedict told the faithful, "God does not live in splendid solitude. He is, rather, an inexhaustible source of life that gives and communicates without ceasing."
Egli ci ha rivelato che Dio è amore non nell'unità di una sola persona, ma nella trinità di una sostanza.
The Holy Father recalled how God is love not in the unity of a single person, but in the trinity of a single substance. He is Creator and Merciful Father. He is the only begotten Son, eternal wisdom incarnate, who died and rose from the dead for us. He is the Holy Spirit that moves the cosmos and all history. God, therefore, said Pope Benedict, is all and only love, purest love, infinite and eternal, and he is ever present in all that surrounds us.
Solo l'amore ci rende felici perché viviamo in relazione.
Following the traditional prayer of Marian devotion, Pope Benedict greeted pilgrims in several languages, including English.
I extend cordial greetings to all the English-speaking pilgrims here today on this Feast of the Most Holy Trinity, especially as the members of the Holy Trinity Prayer Group from Texas. May the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, the love of God, and the fellowship of the Holy Spirit be with you all, and with your families and loved ones at home. And may your stay in Rome strengthen your faith, fill you with hope in God's promises, and inflame your hearts with his love. God bless you all.
Also today, Pope Benedict XVI sent a telegram of condolence to the Archbishop of Hermosillo, Mexico, Jose Ulises Macias Salcedo, where late last week nearly 40 children lost their lives in a fire at a daycare center. Signed by Cardinal Secretary of State Tarcisio Bertone, the telegram conveys Pope Benedict XVI's participation in the suffering of all those who have been touched by the tragedy. It offers assurances of the Holy Father's continued prayers for and spiritual closeness to the victims and their families.
Thanks there to Chris Altieri for that report. My friend, the Abbot Timothy Wright, was back in Rome after one of the many travels he undertakes to promote Christian-Muslim dialogue and peace. He had just been to Tanzania in Eastern Africa, so I popped in to see him where he lives here in Rome at the Pontifical Beda College. During our conversation, he showed me a book he had been given during his stay in Dar es Salaam. Dogodogo, the name of the book, looks something like a book for children, with its appealing, colourful illustrations and large text. In actual fact, I found out it's much more than that, even although children is what it's all about. Actually, to be more precise, it's about Tanzanian street children who get a chance to tell their stories, illustrate them, and create a valuable teaching tool for their peers in Tanzania and abroad. I asked Father Timothy to tell me about the author. He did more than that. He gave me her telephone number and suggested I speak to her personally.
My name is Kasha Parham, and I'm living in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. Part of my time, I'm the wife of the British High Commissioner. I'm also a teacher at the International School of Tanganyika. But my heart really lies in the work that I've been doing at the Dogo Dogo Center for Street Children.
As I mentioned, Dogo Dogo is the name of the book. But above all, it's the name of the centre, which provides a haven for boys rescued from the street in Dar es Salaam, which is where the book stemmed from. Kasha, I said, tell me more.
Dogo Dogo actually means little by little. That's the Kiswahili word. And the centre was founded by an American Maryknoll sister called Sister Jean Pruitt. She began with a drop-in centre for boys who she just met on the street and realized that they were in desperate need of love and care and basic rights such as, you know, enough to eat and clothes and a roof over their heads. So she opened a drop-in center in the middle of Dar es Salaam, and really the project grew from there. The word went round, more and more boys were knocking on her door. And she realized that she didn't have enough room at the drop-in center, so she opened another home not far away in Kigogo, where the boys could actually settle down and follow some kind of routine. So whereas at the drop-in center, you know, they can come and go pretty much as they want whilst they're making that adjustment from life on the street to following a proper routine. But at Kigogo, there's much more structure. It's run more like a family, and they really have to settle down and have a proper bedtime, proper meal times, and commit to life not on the street, but more a normal life, really, with school and chores and the things that a lot of other children take for granted.
How many children does the centre host?
At the moment, there are about 40 in the drop-in centre, and another 60 who've now moved on to the Kigogo home. And there is also a vocational training centre out at Bunju, where there are another 40 young men. The primary school graduates who come out of Kigogo have the option to go on to vocational training if they want to. Sister Jean encourages them to, because then there's a good chance that they'll get a good trade and make a decent living. But many of the boys really want to go to secondary school. So she's now set up a safe house for them in town where they can stay, and they're supervised, and they can attend local secondary schools in Dar es Salaam if they do well enough in their exams.
Is the problem of street children in Tanzania a vast problem?
It really is a problem. And in fact, it's a problem that is only just beginning to be talked about. And that's one of the lovely things that's actually come out of the book, is that it's encouraged local people to talk about this and to really to face up to it. Because in the past, it was a bit of an embarrassment, you know, something to be swept under the carpet. The government does have, I know, hearts and minds are there, but because their resources are so stretched, you know, there are so many areas which need funding, health and education, that it's difficult for money to reach, you know, right the way down to the very, very bottom. And these children who live on the street, you know, they really are the poorest of the poor.
It's a problem that is born from poverty, I would assume, not from any other social unease.
Yes, poverty, and also something that comes out very strongly in the book is that the children themselves realize that they're best chance in life is to get to go to school. And many of them are stuck in the middle of the countryside, often not with their parents because their parents have died. They're looked after by grandparents or by aunts and uncles who use them as child labor. They're not allowed to go to school. They have to stay at home and look after the animals, you know, help to scratch some kind of a living from the soil. And they watch the other children going to school, and they know that that's what they need to do. And very, very often that's the reason why they run away.
This comes across very clearly in the book, in the Dogo Dogo book. All the children describe their stories, and they all say, I want to go to school. And when they do go to school, they say, the classes are fun, it's easy, I like going to school, I want to go to secondary school. Will you talk to me a little bit about the book?
The book just happened. It was extraordinary. I didn't set out to write a book at all. I was helping the Standard 7, that's the final year of primary school. I was helping those boys with their English, because in Tanzania, primary education is all in Kiswahili. But when they go on to secondary, they have to make a switch overnight into English. And all of secondary school is taught in English, and all the exams are in English. So it's a big step for them to make that transition. So I'd been teaching regularly and, of course, enjoying it very much. If you ever come to Dar es Salaam and you come to the Kigogo home, you'll realize that once you go there, it's very, very difficult to disengage. I'm sort of committed for life, I think, now. But anyway, these English lessons, one day we were learning the past tense, the past simple, and the easiest, most fun way for the boys to practice use of the past tense was to tell me things that had happened to them in the past. And then gradually it just dawned on me that things they were telling me were incredibly important and really needed to be written down. So that's how the book started. And it just began with Isaac, who told me everything that had happened to him. And then he said, well, really, Mama, you need to talk to Moses. And then Moses said, well, there's Edward. He needs to tell you a thing or two. And the whole thing just grew from there on its own. All I did really was just write down everything that the boys told me.
The stories are simple and they all have to do with love and with loss. The trials the children describe are incredibly cruel as they speak of their escape from violence and abuse and of their quest for a better life. You were saying that the stories the boys were telling you were stories that were very important, that had to be told, and they found a place in the book. Now, who does the book go to? How are you diffusing this wealth of important information? Yeah.
That's such an important part of the whole project. I think, to begin with, I was hoping that these boys would just be given a voice. That's what they needed, a voice, because so few people, so few adults really had ever listened to them. But then I realized that they had something important to say to young people in the developed world, in England, in the UK, school-age children who possibly relate best to stories told by children themselves. And I actually used the book to create a series of lesson plans for my grade 10 students at the international school. And it was very exciting because it was clear very quickly that they were absolutely fascinated by this book. And even quite demotivated teenagers, I found really interested and wanting to know more and learning a lot. So Macmillan UK are actually going to reprint the book in the UK for UK schools. And with the help of various friends and contacts, I've managed to get quite a lot of interest from schools in the UK. So what I hope is that when it's reprinted in May, there'll be a lot of interest, especially on the citizenship curriculum, and also actually as a text for the students with English as an additional language. You probably notice that the prose is quite simple and quite direct. So for teenagers who find English difficult, it's actually very accessible. So the content is age-appropriate, but the language is easy enough for EAL students. Access.
And what about the boys, the protagonists of the books themselves, Isaac, Emmanuel? What reaction did they have when they saw the book and their own stories?
They were absolutely over the moon, and they loved being presented to Mama Kikwete, the wife of the Tanzanian president, who came to launch the book jointly with Cherie Blair. So it was all very exciting for them. And actually, at the book launch, we were able to announce that USAID have put up the funding for a Kiswahili translation so that schools and communities in Tanzania will all be able to have copies in their own language. For me, this is doubly important because not only is it a lovely text for school children to read in Kiswahili in Tanzanian schools, it's also a good vehicle for families and communities to talk about this issue of street children. Because I think that when families can talk about problems and issues like this, sometimes they can actually avert the problem before it happens. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of an excellent way for people to discuss and to come up with solutions, as long as they have something to talk about, some reason to be open and to get over the taboo.
Yes, as Kasia mentions, Cherie Blair, the wife of the former British Prime Minister, was in Dar es Salaam and visited the Dogo Dogo Centre. She also wrote the preface to the book, and this is how she describes the dedication of Sister Jean Pruitt.
Faced with so much poverty and so many needing help, it would be easy to despair, but Sister Jean is a remarkable woman. Her dedication reminds me of the old story of the woman putting back into the sea some of the many starfish stranded as the tide turned. A young man, watching, tells her that she is wasting her time, that there are too many beached starfish, and it doesn't matter what she does. Returning another starfish to the water, she replies simply, "It matters to this one."
At the end of a book, there is a little blurb that says that we can all help the boys in the book and others like them. How can we do that?
Yes, I think to be aware and to be sympathetic is a step, certainly. I think the example that has been set by Sister Jean and all the people who work with her, who they show how important it is to love and nurture and encourage the next generation, because children are our future, and if we don't look after them and love them, there's no hope. So what I'm really hoping is that people will read the book and follow the example of these grown-ups who show this tremendous concern for the next generation. I hope also that they'll be inspired by the courage and the tenacity of the boys. I mean, I certainly am inspired by them, and it gives me a huge boost. Whenever things are difficult for me, I just think of how they kept going. On a practical level, of course, Sister Jean is always desperate for money. I can't put it any other way. In the past, she had a lot of help from several governments in the developed world. But of course, now many of them give to the Tanzanian government direct in the form of general budget support. They don't support individual, small, specific NGOs like Dogo Dogo. So Sister Jean spends a lot of time going round to various funds, putting forward proposals and collecting money here and there. And there is actually a website for the centre on the back of the book for individuals who would like to make a donation. It's possible for them to do that through the website.
The address of the website is very simple. It's www.dogodogocenter.org. And in a brief afterword, at the back of the book, Kasha Parham points out that the stories in the book are a testament to the courage, resilience and lack of self-pity that characterise the boys at Dogodogo. But, she says, it's also a precious social document, and will, she hopes, provoke a practical response from its readers, so that stories like these are no longer commonplace. Now we go over to my friend, film critic Peter Malone, who heads the film office at Cygnus, the World Catholic Association for Communication. Today he told me about a sure summer hit and what sounds to me as his favourite film at the recent Cannes Film Festival. Peter, welcome back to the programme.
Thanks very much, Linda.
Talking about one of your favourites at Cannes, I take it. We're going to be talking about Looking for Eric, the film by Ken Loach.
Yes, I'd really like to enthuse about Looking for Eric and recommend it. As I mentioned in the previous programmes, that it did win the Ecumenical Juries Award. And that's an interesting thing, that past ecumenical juries have been very favourable to Ken Loach's films. Up till this, he'd won 8 of them. In fact, along with Christoph Zanussi, he's the director who's won the most ecumenical or Ignis awards. But this time we had, as the president of the jury, a guest president, a Romanian director who lives in France, Radu Michelenu. And he made a good speech at the award, praising the values that were there in Looking for Eric in terms of social justice, its concern about ordinary working class people, but its optimism. And I was very struck by that, because I don't always think of Loach as the most optimistic of directors. I think you've seen some of Loach's films, and some of them can be rather grim.
I have, absolutely. I also, maybe I'm mistaken, but I think that Loach himself has said he's not really religious at all, is he?
No, he's very much socially concerned. I know some of the British reviewers of the past felt he was just too socialist and liked to brand him as a communist, and then got very disedified when they heard that he got so many awards from the churches. But I think I might have mentioned earlier that his films since, I think, 1995 or 96, the screenplays have all been written, including Looking for Eric, by Paul Laverty, a Scotsman who studied for the priesthood in Rome but didn't continue, and that Loach has been very much influenced by Laverty's broader perspectives on the church. So I think that, and again, Loach has just turned 70, so I suppose he's mellowed in older age.
You know what I think he does so well is he really brings out the humanity in his characters, and everyone really relates to them and relates to their misfortunes, and that puts them into contact with the difficulties of the poor, of the unemployed. You come out of a Loach film, you think, gosh, that could have happened to me.
It's true, and this one is set in Manchester. And the central character is a postman, and an ordinary fellow, but his life hasn't turned out at all as he expected. He has 2 failed marriages. He's got 2 stepsons at home who are fairly raucous. He's got a daughter who's actually studying, and he's very supportive, but he hasn't seen his first wife for a long time and is really down and depressed. And the humorous thing is that one of the posties loves self-help books and reads all these exercises. So he gets all the mates at the beginning of the film, and they sit in this room, and he gets them to close their eyes and imagine somebody they really admired.
With your eyes closed, breathing slowly.
What's best, in through the nose and out through the mouth?
Breathe through your arse, if you like, just breathe.
And look at themselves through his eyes, and all of them There's Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, Fidel Castro, Frank Sinatra, and the main postie chooses Eric Cantona. His name is also Eric.
Fidel Castro.
Sammy Davis.
Gandhi.
Nice one. Right. Eric.
Eric Cantona. King Eric. Best footballer ever lived.
And as a result, throughout the film, Eric Cantona appears in the other Eric's imagination.
Sometimes we forget that you're just a man.
I'm not a man. I am Cantona.
And they have a lot of conversations about the meaning of his life and what he ought to do. Some very wise words from Cantona. In fact, when they're talking about goals, he says his favourite memory from his football days is not a goal, but when he was an assist. He actually passed the ball to someone else to get a goal. And the ecumenical jury president was very taken by that quote and used it in the statement or the motivation for the film.
Yeah, let's also just mention, maybe not everybody's a big soccer fan, who Eric Cantona is.
Well, you caught me on that. I had to find out who he was. I did find out a couple of years ago because after his football career with Manchester United, he actually became an actor and has appeared in quite a number of films. Even as long ago as 1998, he was the French ambassador in the film Elizabeth. So he moved from being a very much an admired football star to being an actor.
I've got a feeling that you approved this prize, this ecumenical prize that the ecumenical jury decided to award Ken Loach, and that you personally liked the film very much.
I did, and I should add two things. One is a caution. You mentioned that he presents ordinary people. He presents ordinary people who swear a great deal. And if people don't like hearing that, I think they need a warning. But having said that, underlying all that is what you talked about, is that deep humanity. But this time, he's much more hopeful. He's got a lot of funny remarks and funny sequences. And there is a gang of young thugs in Manchester who terrorise one of the stepsons. So all the mates decide then that they'll confront these young thugs. And three busloads of them on the way to a match all put on Eric Cantona masks and confront these thugs.
We are Operation, Operation Cantona!
And really, the press audience enjoyed it very much and burst into applause. So it's not your typical grim Loach, though there are grim aspects. It's rather much more hopeful.
You've been listening to film critic Peter Malone, head of the film office at Cygnus. That's all from the English feature programme today, and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we'll be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.